While on the road that year, I received word from home that my dad had been diagnosed with prostate cancer and had undergone surgery. As soon as I got back, I drove up to Napa, where my folks were living then, to visit him in the hospital. Since I'd finally left home at the age of 20 after two failed attempts at independence, I hadn't spent much time visiting with Mom and Dad, certainly not as much as I should have. That no doubt contributed to my feelings of guilt and apprehension as I approached the hospital. Also, the relationship between Dad and me had been on a roller coaster ride ever since my entry into adolescence. It was only within the last year or so that I'd felt he'd come to accept me as a person in my own right, and not merely as his wayward child. I walked into Dad's room. He had a private room looking out over the Napa countryside, and saw with a rush of relief that he was in a good mood, full of wisecracks and black humor. I told my doctor I didn't know whether to call him Dr. Swift or Dr. Armor. Not bad for a man who'd just had his prostate cut out and his testicles removed. My respect and love for him peaked right then. This was the Dad I remember from the good days, full of sardonic humor and not at all sorry for himself. We sat around for a while, jiving about this and that, and when it was time for his regular blood draw, in came a drop-dead gorgeous blonde candy striper with the syringe and accessories. Dad saw my eyes bug out and immediately greeted her by name, saying, "This is my son Phil. He's in the Grateful Dead." For some reason, I was embarrassed as hell. Maybe I thought he was explaining why I looked so weird. "Aw, come on, Dad," I stammered. "She probably never heard of us." A statement that she wisely neither confirmed nor denied, thereby depriving me of the chance to chatter up with a backstage invitation. She finished her work and left. It was not until I'd said my goodbyes and was driving out of the hospital parking lot that I realized he really is proud of me, that I'm in a popular band and have made a name as a musician. How come I couldn't see that? It was a classic example of an all-too-human tendency to misread situations negatively, respond in kind, and then see the light after it's too late. Between that time and the end of the summer, I'd been fooling around on acoustic guitar with a chord sequence that had sprung into my mind one day that spring. It's funny how songs occur or develop, each in its own way as if it were a living thing, an organism with its own rules of growth. This particular sequence was a repeated phrase with deceptive cadences leading to three different endings. One leading back to the beginning, the others leading first to a chorus and then in the second instance to a coda. By the beginning of fall it had cohered into an entire song structure complete with melody, lacking only words. I made a rough cassette with just guitar and my melismatic vocal and presented it to Hunter, whom I felt was the only man for this job. Hunter has said elsewhere that I had asked specifically for a song for my father. Actually, I merely mentioned casually that I'd be working out the vocal as I drove to visit him. One way or another, that must have been a catalyst for his imagination. A day later, he presented me with some of the most moving and heartfelt lyrics I've ever had the good fortune to sing. The result was Box of Rain, probably my most well-known and best-loved song, and also the first song on which I sang lead vocal. To this day, I'm asked to sing and dedicate this song to those who are recovering, sick, dying, or who have already passed on.